Hi guys, my name is Aria, and to be honest, I don't know how I'm alive to tell you the story I'm about to tell you. It all started on March 25th. My boyfriend had his birthday in 2 days, and even though our relationship was really rocky, I was looking for something to give him as a present. To be honest, we both argued a lot, and this could be a great opportunity to fix things, so I had to give him a big gift. I searched high and low on the internet for someone selling his favorite Spider-Man action figure, until, with a lot of effort, I found someone who was selling it. This person was a childhood friend of mine, someone I knew who collected Marvel figures and sold as many as he could. I went into my friend's house and he quickly showed me the figure. It was beautiful. I'm sure Tom, my boyfriend, was going to love it. I stayed there having coffee with my friend and catching up with him, and after a few hours, I went back to my house. He couldn't have known where I was, or he would find out what I was going to give him. After that day, Tom spoke to me surprisingly less, but when his birthday came, he picked me up in his car to go to lunch with his family for his birthday. We hadn't dated in a long time, and his family lived far away, so this would be the first time I would meet her. You can imagine how nervous I was. What I imagined at the time was that I would never actually get to meet her because her family had died years ago. I still remember how that day, Tom had a smile from ear to ear. It was almost Machiavellian, but I could tell he was nervous and angry about something. I asked him what was wrong, but he just said he was nervous because he was going to meet his family, and I innocently believed him. As soon as I got into the car, I noticed that he didn't say a word to me or look at me. He was absorbed, and his head was somewhere else. "Hey, tell me, what are you thinking about? Something is clearly happening."
"I told you nothing. Can't you be a little more patient?"
"Then something is happening. If you tell me to be patient, it's because something is about to happen."
Just be patient, okay? I have a surprise for you."
"A surprise for me? It's your birthday, not mine." From that moment on, Tom left me to answer. I was a little uncomfortable after that talk. I felt the surprise couldn't be good, but I decided to give him a chance. Anyway, it's not like he was planning to kill me or anything. Or, at least, that's what I thought at the time. Tom's car started going faster and faster toward the highway. I knew his parents lived in that direction, so I didn't suspect anything strange. When we got on the freeway is when the weirdness really started to happen. Tom started to speed up more and more, until after a few minutes, he was over the limit. I started to get worried and let him know, but he just ignored me. After a few seconds that felt like hours, he began to answer me. "Hey, seriously, what's wrong with you? You're going too fast. We might have an accident."
"Aria, I know you met with a man a few days ago."
"What? What are you talking about? Have you been following me?"
"So you recognize him? Well, it didn't make sense for you to lie either. Yes, I've been following you. If I'm suspicious of you, it's obvious I'm going to have to make sure you're not up to something weird. And I don't regret it. From what I saw, I was right."
"What the hell is wrong with you? That was just a friend. I was buying your birthday present from him." Angrily, Tom put his hand on my neck and looked at me in a defiant manner.
"Don't even think of using my birthday as an excuse. It's enough that you've already betrayed me."
"But I'm telling you the truth."
"Every word you say makes me sick. I'm more and more satisfied with my decision."
"Decision? What are you talking about?"
"You should try to put on your seatbelt as I did, my dear."
Suddenly, Tom turned the car around and started driving down the freeway, on the wrong side of the road. All the cars barely managed to avoid him. Luckily, there were very few people, but still, it was only a matter of time before an accident happened, as Tom increased his speed more and more. Stop the car now! What the hell is wrong with you? Have you gone crazy? Tom didn't answer me, and just kept driving with a psycho face I have never seen since I've known him. I tried to put on my seatbelt before it flew out the window, but to my surprise, it was gone. Someone had cut it off.
Oh, it looks like you don't have a seatbelt. A real shame. But you know what? You deserve it. Only good people like me deserve to live.
You're a psycho! Stop the car! You won't survive either. It's just a belt.
Well, we'll see about that. Unfortunately, I don't think you'll be alive to find out. If you're a kid with a car in front of you, you'll be thrown out of the window for sure. Your head will smash against the glass, and then you'll hit the other car and go straight into the pavement. I have my seatbelt and airbag to protect me.
Why are you doing this to me? I have never been with anyone else. I just wanted you to have a good time today.
Lies. All women are just as treacherous. You were only with me because you just met me. Surely you were already bored with me and you started dating your friend, right?
I swear, I didn't.
I hate liars.
Violently, Tom moved his car and crashed it into my side with another car. The glass in my window shattered and hurt my arm. Tom lost a little control but quickly regained it.
It hurts, doesn't it? You know what? This is love. This is the price of betrayal. I've been following you for as long as I've known you. I always knew you were up to something weird. But you know what? You're mine. And when a toy of mine is defective, I throw it away.
With that said, Tom accelerated to crash into a truck. This time, it was going to happen. The truck showed no signs of evading my boyfriend's car. I had to do something, or I would surely die. In an act of impulsivity, I grabbed Tom's steering wheel and swerved the car to the side. We crashed into a fence and fell down a small ravine, straight into the river. Water began to pour into the car through my broken glass. Tom seemed to have passed out, so I took that moment to swim through the broken car window and escape. But suddenly, Tom grabbed my foot. His gaze was full of anger. This man wasn't interested in saving himself. He just wanted to kill me. As he grabbed my foot, I started to run out of air, and to make it worse, a part of my body was still going through the broken window of the car, and I still had the glass embedded in my skin. Every time my body hit the car, I could feel those little pieces of glass penetrate my skin even further. In my defense, I kicked Tom in the face as hard as I could, and on my third kick, he let go of me. And so I took the opportunity to swim away. As I did so, I could see Tom stretching his arms out to catch me, while the car was sinking deeper and deeper. Tom never made it out of the car. Ironically, it was the seatbelt that doomed him. But then again, he couldn't swim. Nearly drowning, I managed to get out and breathe. And when the police rescued me, I told them everything. There was no trial. And no one questioned what happened to me. It turns out that Tom wasn't really Tom. His name was Francis, and he was a wanted criminal for murdering his entire family. That's why he lived so far away from her. From that day on, I could never trust again. I know that many people are actually good, and not all of them will want to kill me. But I have to go through a very big healing process. Every time someone approaches me, I see Tom reflected in their eyes, and I feel that no matter how good the other person is, they are hiding a serial killer inside them. A few years back, when I was about 16 years old, I and my family, which consisted of my two elder siblings and my parents, drove home from Mexico to Texas. My mom is Mexican, so some of her relatives still live there. Her part of the family is a bit more religious than our relatives in Texas, so We made it a point to go to Mexico at least twice a year. One of my older brothers, Dylan, hates planes, so we usually complete the journey by road in our car. For years now, we start the trip in the morning, stay in a motel for the night, and complete the rest of the journey the next day. However, on this particular trip, Dad had received a call from his workspace that he was needed at work due to an emergency. So, we decided to complete the 12-hour trip as fast as possible, which meant no overnight stops. We started our journey at 4 in the afternoon, and were planning to reach home around 6 a.m. the next day so Dad could make it to his office on time. As Dad drove for hours, we were all getting pretty tired. Although our SUV is quite spacious, sitting in it for so long was uncomfortable, and everyone was agitated, especially me, who was cramped between my two elder brothers who almost took most of the back seat. Around 9 p.m., we stopped at a gas station to fill up the tank, and then at a diner a few miles ahead to grab a quick bite. Around 11:30 p.m., we all had enough. Dad finally declared,
"Guys, I know we're here right now because of me, but I don't think we should be on the road right now. I'm super tired, and I don't want to fall asleep behind the wheel and put your lives in danger. I think we should stop at the next motel we come across."
Everyone was delighted upon hearing this, as we all had been on the road for too long. As Dad drove a few more miles, we did not come across any motel. So eventually, the tiredness got the best of us all, and we decided to park our car beside the highway in a suitable spot and sleep for a while. Even though the thought of sleeping in a car cramped up between my brothers wasn't ideal, at that point, I was willing to take anything over the constant travel. As we found a suitable spot, Dad parked the car and said,
"Guys, lock the door and shut the windows. I'll keep the air conditioning on in the car, and we'll nap for a few hours before we hit the road again."
With that said, in a few minutes, we were all out. The time was about midnight. Suddenly, I woke up due to a loud noise right beside my ear. That's when I realized one of my brothers was laying across my lap, and the other had rested his head on my shoulder and was snoring loudly. Everyone was still fast asleep. However, now I was awake. At first, I tried to get some more sleep, but as the minutes passed, it was clear that I was no longer sleepy. I somehow managed to untangle myself from my brothers and check the time. It was around 2:15 a.m., which meant we were all asleep for more than 2 hours. I sat in the car and played some games on my cell phone, but it soon ran out of battery. That's when I noticed how pitch black it was outside. As the curious kid, I decided to do the most childish thing you could ever imagine. I grabbed my backpack, fetched a small flashlight, and scooted as close to the window as I could, given the fact that my two brothers were on either side of me. I pressed my face against the window and started looking out with the light of my flashlight. In the beginning, I saw nothing more than the highway, some trees, and a field around me. As my eyes got used to seeing in the dark, I started to see more details. That's when I saw something move beside a tree a few feet away from us. I brushed it off as an animal and continued exploring through the window. When I looked at the spot again, this time, I could see a silhouette of a tall man standing right beside the same tree. I thought my mind was playing tricks on me, as the man was as still as the tree trunk itself, so it was possible that it could be a dead tree shaped roughly like a human, and my over-imaginative mind was conjuring up all the rest. Just then, the man who I had almost concluded to be a dead tree trunk moved and hid behind the tree beside him. This was a shock to me. This meant I wasn't seeing things. I switched off my flashlight, but kept staring out the window in the direction of the tree. A few minutes passed, and the man peeked at our car from behind the tree. This time, though, I had no flashlight, so he might have thought that I was asleep. He then emerged fully from his hiding spot and kept staring at our car. I kept looking at him, too. That's when I noticed that his eyes were red, and they were glowing in the dark and staring directly at me. This scared the shit out of me. I had no idea what I should do, so I decided to do the most obvious thing a kid would do. I pulled my brother's leather jacket over my head and hid between them. I did not move more to make a single sound until eventually I fell asleep. A few hours later, I woke up sore from being cramped in between my brothers for so long. As soon as I opened my eyes, a few sun rays hit me square in the face. A very beautiful sunrise was about to happen right beyond the field. However, my brothers and my parents were out of the car inspecting it. This made me curious, so I got out too. The sight I saw shocked me to my core. All over the car, there were muddy handprints, and on the windows and windshields, there were impressions of faces being pressed against them, as if someone was peeking into the car from outside not long ago. This terrified us all, and we decided to drive home and get the hell out of that area as soon as possible. I did not speak a single word about the man I had seen during the rest of the car ride. But after a few days, when we were all discussing how we had put ourselves in a risky position by napping in our car on a highway, I could not hold back. I narrated the whole incident to my family, and this information terrified them even more. We just happened to be lucky that the man, or maybe the men, did not attack us or harm us in any way. But from then on, we decided to visit Mexico by plane and not by road. Moreover, Dad tried to dig into the matter by researching on the internet if a similar incident was reported, but found nothing as such. However, some people claim that what we encountered were field spirits. These are spirits of ancestors of the farmers who own the field, and these spirits protect the fields from intruders or whoever tries to damage the crops. As we were practically parked on the land that belonged to the field, these spirits may have perceived us as threats, but when they realized we meant no harm to them or their fields, they left us alone. Protectors or not, this experience was truly horrific, and I will never travel on that road again.
It happened on the 25th of November, 2007, a day I can never forget. It was around 1 in the morning, and I was on the highway. Now, I'd probably driven past this highway 1,000 times, as my time as a truck driver always saw me using this route. But that night was different, and I could tell that something was very wrong. I started my journey by 8 p.m. on that fateful day, and I was supposed to deliver a massive crate of soft drinks to the nearest warehouse that was located on the outskirts of town. After the truck was loaded up, I quickly began my journey, and on my way to the warehouse, all I could think about was Susie, my 9-year-old daughter whom I'd left at home. It had been really hard for us since her mother decided to leave, so it was up to me to take care of her. I had recently asked my boss if I could take the night shifts, as I wanted to spend my days with my daughter. And even though I hated driving at night, as I knew the dangers of doing that, it was a small sacrifice I had to make so that I could be there when my little angel woke up to go to school. So I drove on, with a smile on my face. Everything went fine at first, as I remember putting on the radio to listen to my usual station. The station was talking about a recent slew of attacks on the roads, but no one had managed to identify the assailants. I attentively listened to the reports, as I hadn't heard any news of the attacks from the other truck drivers. I tried to increase the volume of the radio when it abruptly lost its signal. Loud, static noise filled my truck as I started to fiddle with the radio. The radio had been acting up recently, and I'd meant to fix it, but just didn't have the time. I tried to turn it off and on again, but that's when out the corner of my eye, I saw something that shocked me. I slowed down the truck as I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me, but after getting a good look at it, I knew I wasn't mistaken. Laid out before me were a couple of cut-down trees blocking the highway path. Now, this would have been normal if the highway was surrounded by trees, as it wasn't uncommon for a tree to fall by itself and block the path. But there weren't any other trees in sight, so it was clear to me that someone had purposely put it there to block the path. I was tense now, as I didn't know why the path was blocked or what was going to happen next. I thought about going back, but I had already spent 5 hours on the road, and I knew going back to use a different route would cost me more time. I also knew the warehouse I was supposed to deliver the goods to was really close. I thought about it for a couple of minutes, and against better judgment, I decided to continue forward. I slowly hit the gas as I wanted to make sure. I drove over the trees softly. I didn't want to drive slowly, but I knew doing that made sure the goods weren't compromised. Unfortunately, that was another costly mistake, as right when I was about to cross the trees, I saw them. Numerous men holding metal pipes and rocks immediately emerged from the darkness. The sight of these people made my heart jump, and I instantly froze. My mind started to race as I wondered what they were going to do to me, and that's when I watched in horror as they all attacked my truck. The men at the front tried to take out my headlights, and I heard them violently striking the front of the truck with their metal pipes. The men who held bricks and rocks then started to throw their projectiles at my windows and windshield. It didn't take long before my windshield's glass gave out, and I felt a hard brick strike my head. The pain was unbearable, and I could feel the blood from the wound on my head dripping into my right eye. My vision then became blurry, and a searing pain ran through my entire body. I could hear them on the sides of the truck now, and I was scared shitless. But even with all this happening, all I could think about was my daughter, Susie. I knew I couldn't die here, as I was the only one she had left. Her mother had already abandoned her. I wasn't going to leave her too, so I steeled my resolve. I hesitated to do this at first, as I didn't want to kill anyone, but I knew at this moment it was either my life or theirs. So I gathered the strength and honked my horn. I did that as a warning, as I knew I wasn't going to stop now. So with no hesitation, I hit the gas. The truck started moving forward, and I watched them all scatter as I made my way for the trees. Driving over the blockade was a rough bump, and I heard the goods in the back jolt and fall, but I didn't care. I knew I had to do anything to get out of there. I finally made my way past the trees, and for a second, I thought the worst was over. But that's when I heard loud thuds outside the truck. I then looked through my window to see a crazy-looking man holding onto the door of my truck like a psychotic stowaway. His eyes were bulging red, and he held a jagged rock in his left hand. Luckily, the window on my door wasn't completely broken like my windshield, but it was still severely cracked. And even though the window was closed, the man's screams reverberated through the entire truck as he screamed the words, "Stop the truck or I'm going to send you straight to hell!" Fear filled every inch of my body now, but I didn't let that stop me as I kept hitting the gas. Seeing I wasn't going to listen to him, the crazy man then lifted the rock and brought it down with all his strength on my window. I wasn't surprised when the window gave in, as it was already severely cracked from the last attack. I knew I couldn't take another blow to the head like the one I had gotten earlier, so I handled the wheel with one hand and I maneuvered his attacks with the other. I managed to get him to drop the rock, and that's when he started to force his hand on the wheel to get the truck to stop. I'd lost a lot of blood now from the wound on my head, and I knew I couldn't do this all night. I racked my brain looking for a solution, and at first I thought about violently swerving the truck to shake him off, but I knew I could hurt someone else if I did that. I was desperate now, as I knew I had to do something, and that's when I remembered a detail that saved my life. Having traveled this route before, I knew that a few minutes away from the warehouse was a police station, so I mustered every ounce of strength left in my body, and I made my way there. It didn't take long for my assailant to realize what was going on, and right before we reached the station, the man finally let go of the truck. I watched in horror out of my partly broken rearview mirror as I could see my assailant fall and tumble on the hard asphalt. Shockingly, the speeding cars on the road managed to stop in time before they could run him over. I figured my assailant was already dead now, as it was a pretty hard fall. But to my surprise, I saw the man get up and hobble out of sight. The cops in the station had already heard all the commotion, and a couple of them started to chase the man. The remaining officers who didn't go after him stayed behind to help me. As I came out of the truck, I started to stutter the words. "I was viciously attacked by a group of men. It's all on my dash cam." I proceeded to get the device when I suddenly felt woozy. I then fell to my knees as they all surrounded me. One of the cops then said, "You need to calm down, sir. You're badly hurt. Is there someone we can call?" But before I could respond, the world around me started to get dark, and the last thing I managed to say before I passed out was, "Susie." As all I could think about was her. I woke up in the hospital the next day, and sleeping on a chair in my room was my daughter, Susie. I could tell she had been crying all night, and right when I was about to call out to her, she woke up. She immediately ran to hug me, and I remembered crying tears of joy as I had survived that morbid incident, and I was able to see my little girl again. After this moment, the cops came into the room and asked for my statement, so I told them everything that happened. The cops then told me my dashcam footage was watched, and they were able to catch most of my assailants. They then assured me that a rigorous search was still going on to find the ones that were still on the run, so that they could be brought to justice. I never rode at night again after that incident. I asked my boss for shorter days, and even if it meant lesser pay, it also meant I could spend more time with my kid. I also knew I was staying safe from the potentially dangerous people lurking on the streets at night. This ghastly incident left me with some PTSD, as I still steer clear of that place today. And even though it takes a longer time to get to my destination, I still choose the longer trip, as I can never shake off the feeling that some of those men are still out there, waiting to get their revenge.